Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Friday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber at Post 9 of the New York Stock Exchange. Futures are feeling some relief, not just from Microsoft, Google earnings and guidance, but this morning core PCE mostly in line, lowest year-on-year number since 2021. Bond yields are lower across the curve. Our roadmap's going to begin with big tech, though, bouncing back. Alphabet and Microsoft both up sharply on their respective beats.
Plus, the Biden administration is awarding Micron $6 billion in federal grants. This to boost production of chips in the state of New York and Idaho. We're going to discuss all of that with Micron CEO. He's live here at Post 9. And the oil giants, Exxon and Chevron, both posting lower first quarter profits. Chevron CEO Mike Wirth is going to join us. That'll be later this hour. We, of course, will go over those results.
Let's begin with the markets and this morning's inflation data. Highly anticipated, Jim, not just core PCE, but best couple of months on spending in about a year.
Look, this is a front-seat-back-seat day versus the what we got. I would even think, I'm going to go as far as David. I'm going to mention somebody. You tell me if you agree. Pangloss.
Panglossian number. That's where you're
starting
the show.
Are we taking the SAT this
morning?
That's
where you're starting the show today. On this Friday in late April.
Pangloss, man.
Okay.
Get me Pangloss.
You want to explain that to everybody else?
Because we have the bonds are right. I have to tell you, Carl, last night, I'm like sending a note to Ruth Porat in the middle of the night. She's like, you know, fantastic. I mean, what? She's Alphabet, David.
Yeah, she's the
Alphabet
president
gave us not only an unbelievable blowout number, but they also gave us granularity. They told us what's going on. It was joy. I left that Time Warner dinner with Sarah. Hey, now you like that, dropping that. And it was just incredible. That was one of the greatest conference calls. And then Microsoft blows Alphabet away with how great it was.
Does Microsoft blow Alphabet away? Really?
Kind of.
You think so?
I just think the increase there is just extraordinary.
The increase.
And, well, because the use of AI.
The increase being what?
Azure, the upside surprise. The upside surprise was remarkable because it was both top and bottom line. Mm-hmm. And Amy Hood, who is like never effusive, I thought, came in and kind of just said, all right, this is ours. Give me the ball. And I thought it was a great quarter. What can I say? And then, by the way, Snap. I mean, I know we're small, but I think you have my man from Snap.
We do have Evan, yes, that's
well,
right.
Well, that'll be good. No, you didn't. I mean, I know it's not big, but we had a night last night about AI, David, that tells me it's real.
Well, the spending is incredible.
It's
while you were at your fancy dinner, I was just home watching the Knicks lose, but reading those conference calls. And the thing that stands out, of course, in both Microsoft
was how badly the Sixers played in the first half?
It was how much they're spending, how much they continue to spend. This after, of course, Meta took up guidance on its CapEx to what could be even as high as $40 billion, though most people don't expect it will necessarily go there during the course of the year.
Yeah, we have Sanjay Mehrotra from
But we're talking now $50 billion from Microsoft, potentially. Somebody on the call asking, could you see yourself spending $100 billion? And they didn't really say no.
No, when that's a check to who?
It's all NVIDIA.
Right, and who was on 60 Minutes on Sunday night?
I don't know, because it's Friday.
Jensen's going to be on. Vinci himself.
Oh, Raimondo last weekend and Jensen this weekend.
Become more of a business show.
Yeah. Too bad they don't have anybody who can do a good business interview. But that's okay.
Bill Whitaker's going to be fabulous. This is a terrific
Bill Whitaker?
Interview. It's going to be a terrific interview. But I just think that this, Carl, what this said was, I understand exactly why Zuckerberg has to spend the money, because this is an arms race. Who has the best AI? Who has the best interaction with when you speak to AI? And right now, Alphabet's surprised me.
You seem
Alphabet
a lot more interested in this than core PCE.
Core PCE.
Yeah. We tried to lead with the core PCE.
No, core PCE.
You came up with a word,
Pangloss,
that nobody really knows what the heck you're talking about, and then you moved on.
Forget the Pangloss, okay? I mean, everybody's like, forget it. It wiped it out in the sense that we no longer have to be as concerned. I would go so far as to say that, let's say President Trump were elected, I think he'd say, you know what, Fed, knock yourself out. As opposed to the New York Times story, or the Wall Street Journal story, which basically said that no interest rate moves we made without him. This number was good enough to make it so that Powell is now able to say, if things don't go our way, we can cut again. We can. Because it was not stagflation. That was an amazing story. It's not stagflation. That's what happened. We took stagflation off the table, David.
Oh, so it lasted for less than 24 hours.
Because we got rid of the stag or the flation? The stag.
More the stag than the
flation. More the stag. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for that analysis.
Why do you hurt me, Michael? Can we just go over for a second what happened here?
Sure, what happened?
Okay, so we did have, this is what happened. This is why I'm going to drop the pan gloss, all right?
Okay, thank you.
Talk a little more Voltaire.
Okay, Voltaire. Perfect, yeah.
No, we're going to do about Rabelais.
Are you going to do it in the original French?
No, actually, we're going to do about Erasmus. We're going to do Much Ado About Nothing.
Ah,
that's what that was.
Okay.
That's actually Shakespeare mixed with.
Yes, I'm aware.
All right, so here's what's going on. March was a weak month. And that's why I'm not worried. March was a weak month. And we're getting that from a lot of different companies that say, you know, like a J.B. Hunt, March was a weak month. All the transport, except for Union Pacific, because they have precision railroading. Do you see that number? By Jim Vena?
Yeah.
Your partner? Your pal?
We do have a downgrade of Knight today, Jim. We got a downgrade of Cat on the notion that the business is operating well but looks to flatten in the near term.
Well, because March was weaker. And it's hard to get a grip on why March was weaker because you have so much infrastructure money coming in. So I was surprised, but I know that there wasn't a...
By the way, they increased their target to 350.
Well, I mean, yeah, you got... Some of these guys were bears at 208. They were really terrible, but... I just think that what's happened, Carlos, is that it's the J.B. Hunt, which is that you had a good January, you had a spike in February, and then you had a decline in freight. It was one of the most amazing conference calls ever in terms of like a realization that March just got weak. And what people say it was the 60 basis point increase really, really hurt everybody other than housing, because housing was offered the equivalent of a variable rate deal.
So the move up in interest rates during that
really
course,
hurt.
Yeah.
Really? No,
there was
really
a,
hurt.
No, you're right. There was a, there. I've heard this. We talked about this now for a couple of weeks because we've both been getting similar data points from people.
Well,
I think in terms
yes.
of deceleration through March.
And
okay, the question is, has it continued?
Yes. April's just okay. Just okay. Now, look, we'll hear. I thought that when you retweeted Doug McMillon, it's a little
the U.S. chief, actually, John right. Ferner, talked to ABC News
from Walmart.
Now, McMillon did say, both Costco and McMillon said, and that was the Rich Galanti, who's retired, was like the best CFO
right,
in America.
Rich Galanti was the CFO of Costco.
Right.
Doug McMillon was the CEO of Walmart. We're talking about Walmart and Costco.
Well, they both said, listen, we're going to hold the line on inflation. Now, you know, that's 200 million people that we're talking about that benefit. Doug said this on Mad Money. He said, listen, I think we can hold the line. So if you can check inflation, particularly at the food level, which would be Costco and Walmart, you're really left with, and you don't have to worry about auto because we know, I mean, I met with Carvana last week. I mean, finally, the used cars are coming down. We know that from CarMax. That leaves shelter. And shelter's hard to get around because of the 10 million new people have come to the country. It's also because it's just the building didn't occur that we thought. It just didn't occur. But if just shelter, then the American people are going to get lower rates at some point this year.
In the back half of the year, you think?
Yeah, because shelter's doable. It's doable. I mean, you can't put things up right now, but a lot of places started right after COVID, and they're going to come online in the next 6 months. That could help shelter. Even though, David, no one's building more houses than they want because they all build to spec. No one builds just like, hey, you know what? We'll put up a lot of houses and see what happens. They don't do that anymore. That's why Toll had a good number. That's why Pulte had a good number. That's why KBH had a good number. That's why Lennar had a good number.
Right. That has been one of the features of this last couple of years. And unexpectedly, it's been the strength of the home builders.
They have discipline.
Even with, of course, a significantly enormous 550 basis point rise in rates.
Look, we're building half as many homes as we did when we were a country of 150 million people. So.
We're underbuilt.
We're underbuilt.
We're underhoused.
Wow. You're on today.
Oh, yeah. It's a big Friday here.
David's David.
You guys look great in those nice ties. Beautiful.
Wow. You should wear a T-shirt that protects the shirt.
A T-shirt?
Yeah, protects the shirt. Yeah, keeps it from filth.
I'm a T-shirt guy.
You always put, I learned that at Goldman. They sent me home the first day. They said, where's your T-shirt? I said, wait a minute. You don't work here without a T-shirt.
I'm learning too much about you
guys. I had to go to Century 21. Then they said, did you go to Century 21? I said, yeah.
When we come back, as Jim and David mentioned, Micron's chief Sanjay Mehrotra on the billions his company is set to receive in this CHIPS Act funding. He'll join us here at Post 9. Meantime, pre-market looking pretty good, although Dow remains on pace for the worst month since September of 22. Don't go away.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
6.1 billion in CHIPS funding, paired with $125 billion from Micron to build these facilities here in New York and near Micron headquarters in Idaho. And I, you know, by the way, it's been mentioned before, it's the single biggest private investment ever in the history of these two states.
The White House announced a preliminary agreement with Micron, awarding the company up to $6.1 billion in CHIPS Act funding for the building of new plants. Second largest chip subsidy in the nation. And we are so just thrilled here at Post 9 to have Micron CEO Sanjay Mehrotra. And Sanjay, first of all, congratulations. This is a remarkable piece of business because you never left the United States to begin with.
Jim, great to be here on the show with you all in person. Yesterday was definitely a historic day. 18 months ago, we were in Syracuse announcing our vision for manufacturing semiconductor memory here in the U.S. And yesterday, the president was back there with us, and that vision is coming to reality. With this $6.1 billion of grants, we will be building fabs in Boise, Idaho, as well as Syracuse, New York, with $50 billion of investment through 2030 timeframe. So this is an exciting time, bringing leading-edge memory semiconductor manufacturing to the United States.
Are you talking about doing high-bandwidth memory? You know, which when we go back and forth, this is the most cutting-edge data center chip. Are you doing high-bandwidth memory in Syracuse and Idaho?
Once those fabs get built, they will be absolutely in production with leading-edge memory. High-bandwidth memory absolutely uses leading-edge memory. So yes, the wafers for high-bandwidth memory for the future nodes will certainly be produced there.
Fantastic. Now, before I turn over to my colleagues, I looked up Clay, which is a suburb of Syracuse. Sanjay, you need tens of thousands of people. Where are you going to get them in an area that, frankly, has not historically had that many workers?
That's a big focus of us. You know, Syracuse area definitely had manufacturing in the past, so it has the roots of manufacturing in the region. The region has, the New York State has a strong university ecosystem as well. You know, junior colleges, SUNY, and prestigious institutions as well. And of course, Micron is heavily engaged with the community there. In fact, with Governor Hochul, we established a community investment framework with $250 million investment from Micron to reach out to rural communities, to reach out to veterans, underrepresented groups, women, and bring them into the workforce, start apprenticeship programs. Micron has started a clean room in Onondaga Community College to train students there. And so we are building the workforce, not only in the Northeast here, but across the country. We have major initiatives, no question, that you know, bringing the talent is a major priority. And of course, engaging with construction unions as well to bring the construction workforce that's needed for the fabs.
When you talk about over the next 20 plus years spending a potential of $125 billion, Sanjay, what are going to be the markers by which you actually judge whether, in fact, additional capital is warranted? And when will you start to sort of assess whether it's worth investing beyond the obviously large initial investment?
Yes, absolutely. Our investments will be in line with the market demand. And of course, in the preliminary memorandum of terms that we have signed with the CHIPS program office, we have built in the flexibility so that we can equip our fabs, bring up production in line with the market demand. That is extremely important for us to be staying disciplined with CapEx, focusing on cost, and bringing supply in line with demand. So, of course, looking at the demand will always be a key measure. I want to point out that our first fab that will be brought up with the support of the CHIPS grants in Boise, Idaho, is co-located with our R&D fab. And that really is a great benefit, to have R&D and manufacturing co-located. That accelerates time to market of innovative technologies that will go into products like high bandwidth memory. And then we take them to mega scale in New York. So this $125 billion investment in New York and Idaho will be over the course of 20 years. We are right now focused on the first fab in Boise, Idaho, and the first two fabs in New York, with investment of about $50 billion going through 2030 timeframe.
Right. 50. Yep.
Is the workforce issue going to be more acute in Idaho or New York, would you say?
Well, we are, Micron was founded in Idaho 45 years ago, and you know, we are quite a powerhouse there. And you can see that in Boise, Idaho, Micron established the workforce. Micron has built a leading edge semiconductor memory company in Boise, Idaho. We can do that in Syracuse as well.
Early in when the grants were being framed, there was some criticism that Commerce was attaching too many conditions to really what was about internal HR policies and things like that. Was that ever a sticking point?
Well, things like HR policies, these have been DNA of Micron all along. We have focused on really inclusive workforce, absolutely providing childcare to our team members. We are very soon, we'll be starting a childcare center. Some of these things were already in play even before we filed for our CHIPS application. And of course, some of these details regarding some of the terms, we continue to work on these with the CHIPS program office. They will ultimately be in their final form with the final agreement expected to be later this summer.
Okay, so Sanjay, the last 36 hours, we've seen an incredible amount of money going to be spent by Mark Zuckerberg, okay, at Meta. We see it at Google, and we see it at Microsoft. Now, I know it's initially NVIDIA, but it's going to be you, too. Were you surprised at the gigantic amount of money that is going toward you from these hyperscalers?
No question that, as we discussed in our earnings call in March, that it is AI that is accelerating the demand for memory. And memory is a key enabler. I mean, think about it. AI needs data. I mean, you look at large language models, then they're going into trillions of parameters. They need more and more memory. They need that high bandwidth memory. They need low power memory. They need more capacity of memory. If you just look at NVIDIA GPUs, you know, starting from A100 with 40 gigabyte of memory, the latest Blackwell announced with 192 gigabyte of memory in just a matter of short period of time. So memory is a key enabler. And I just wanted to show you, because you brought up high bandwidth memory. Jim, this is a technical marvel here.
This is
24 gigabyte. Today it is with 8 die stacked into it. This is smaller than my thumbnail, thinner than my thumbnail, and we have stacked 8 die into this today. It has already sampled this stack with 12 die in it. Next year, it will further give an increase, and these AI accelerators are hungry for memory. And you know, these die, what they do is they need today 3 times more silicon to produce the same number of bits. And, you know, they give tremendous high bandwidth. So what it's doing is it's creating a real shortage on the leading edge supply. Not only high bandwidth memory is in great demand, it's creating a shortage on the non-high bandwidth memory. So this is the kind of marvel the Micron team produces.
Okay, now, one last question. I know they're like hurrying me here. But okay, so Microsoft says PCs now stabilized, going hard. How do you feel about PCs right now?
Well, we mentioned in our earnings call in March that PCs will have a modest growth, low single digits, 24 over 23, in terms of unit sales of PCs. What's important is AI-enabled PCs require more memory. They require 40 to 80% more DRAM content than an average PC. And these AI-enabled PCs with neural processor units will continue to increase their adoption late this year and into 2025.
Well, the reason I asked this is because Intel last night said that PCs are weak. So I was thinking maybe that it's raining on this side of the street and you got the sunny side.
Look, I mean, content increase is a factor. And for us, another big factor is that the supply is very tight.
All right.
This is what leads to 24 as being a year of recovery.
No, you called the
bottom. With improving fundamentals of financial performance and 25 being a record year for the company.
You nailed it at 65 on that conference call. That was an amazing call. It's catching
thank
double.
You.
They're telling me I got to go. I don't want to go. But I guess we have to. Sanjay, thank
we have
you
a great
so
team.
Much.
We have a great team.
Yeah, you got the stars.
Yeah.
Good work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
When we come back this morning, an exclusive with Chevron's Mike Wirth. We'll hear what he has to say about the company's results today, along with oil and nat gas prices, as the futures hanging in there on this Friday after an eventful week. Don't go anywhere.
Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to fight rising costs of inflation or pay off your debt or anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, can help. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been helping great investors like you. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking for tips, Yahoo Finance makes it super easy by putting all the tools and data you need in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and more. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. That's how Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you take a look at your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective is what great investors need. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
A lot of hand-wringing about the U.S. economy this week. Are we in stagflation? Is the economy running too hot? One thing the Journal points out today, Jim, this year, the U.S. will account for 26.3% of global GDP. That's the highest in 20 years.
But look, we are in a bit of a halcyon moment, but remember also our trade partners are not, particularly China, so it's easy to sneak in. A lot of what we're doing is what we're going to be talking about with Mike Wirth. It's Chevron. It is oil and gas infrastructure. It is a major turn for almost everybody. You take the Southeast. It would be everything from Dow Chemical there to what Sanjay's talking about with the gigantic spend on semis. So it's happening. It's not recognized as much because I think a lot of people feel that the administration has not been that good at getting growth, which is why the communication of that message is kind of strange for America.
We'll get a jobs number a week from today. And if April comes in below 4, we'll tie the record for the most consecutive months below 4% unemployment.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're a growth country like we've not been. And remember, we have all immigrants, 10 million people that's come in. A lot of these countries do not have net increase in population. We do. And that is vital for growth. So it's an exciting time for the economy and reflected in the stock market. We do need 4.1 so that we can get a Fed rate cut, but that's not going to happen yet, although you know, we've got some weakness.
I know we wanted to dig in a little bit more, David, to at least the Google numbers, the dividend, the CapEx beat, the buyback addition, $70 billion.
A new dividend. The enormous buyback, as you say, $70 billion. A lot of time spent, Jim, on the call as well, talking about YouTube, which is something you love to talk about.
I
because
do. It's
of
really
core, incredibly strong numbers. And we'll get to Microsoft as well. And what we're, you know, again, at the top of the show, we didn't get through all the numbers, the up 31% at Azure. But Google, that acceleration was significant. doesn't search, by the way, is as high as it's ever been, which would certainly seem to rebut those who, at least in the near term, have said that the company is facing an existential crisis in terms of search as it moves to generative AI and whether they can maintain what has essentially been a monopoly in search. Well, the concerns perhaps fading away. They yes. kind of have over the course of the last few weeks anyway in terms of the stock. But YouTube TV, by the way, has got 8 million subscribers.
Absolutely.
We talk, and I talk often about the loss of video subscribers amongst the so-called cable companies. Yesterday it was our parent company, Comcast. Today it's Charter with a loss of 405,000 video subscribers on a smaller base, by the way, so percentage-wise larger for the quarter. But some of that is being made up by the likes of YouTube TV, which, again, at 8 million subs has become a major player in terms of distributing cable channels, essentially.
I'm so glad you brought this up because they're talking about the benefiting from the combination of strong watch time growth, innovation, the user. David, that's where the viewer's going, okay?
Yep.
They're going to YouTube. And this was the first. I begged them for data on YouTube. And you get the data and you realize that, well, this is how people are going to get TV.
I mean, it's already begun. It's well underway. And, you know, just the numbers themselves on YouTube in terms
Wasn't
of where they
amazing?
Stand. We're very significant. What are we talking about? I just wanted to kind of give people. Ad revenues were up 21% year over year. They're talking both direct response and brand. Network revenues were down. But, again, subscriptions, platforms, devices, year-on-year revenues increased 18%. No. Again, they talk about it being driven largely by YouTube subscriptions.
Right.
That's
ads.
Not just YouTube TV. That's overall
right.
subscriptions.
They got ads, beauty ads. They have fashion ads, lifestyle, entertainment. David, you know who they are? They are like the old days, the halcyon days, I use that twice now, sorry, of linear TV.
Right.
And it's incredible. This is where they all went. They went there.
A lot? Well, not all of them.
No, I'm saying the direction.
Not all of them, but a bunch
of
them.
And if people find out.
A bunch of the cord cutters have gone to that. And or YouTube has just replaced, that is, YouTube itself has just replaced watching television.
Well, it's not, they don't do fire shows, they don't do cop shows. Not like NCI. I mean,
no, but they look at Mr. Beast videos, and he's
cat.
Enormous.
Remember the cat videos you mentioned
yes,
the other day?
The cat videos yeah. are amazing. No, I beg Ruth Porat, who's just unbelievable and really crushed it last night, president, former CFO.
Yeah.
Please tell us how good this is. And I came away thinking, look out, David Zaslav. They want NBA. They want...
Yeah, I mean, but what? You can't compete. I mean, the likes of these smaller players can't compete with
the
Amazons, the Apples,
NBA.
The Alphabets of the world.
I was waiting to say, listen, we're going to buy the NBA.
When it comes to that.
They can buy Juventus. Manchester United.
And they showed some
Crystal
expense
Palace.
Control. Headcount was down.
I know. No, David, this quarter, I know that I love the Microsoft quarter, Carl, but this quarter even told us that the other bets aren't doing badly. Waymo.
Yes.
Wait a minute. So we have a guy named Musk, okay? And he's trying to do, like, self-driving something, robo. And then we have robo right here. This is all the robo we need. This is robo.
Mercedes had some news on that front this week as well. By the way, bunch of price target increases. B of A goes to 200. I think Evercore 220. The B of A note's titled Firing on All Cylinders, just in terms of the sell side reaction.
Wait. Oh, no, this is good. I mean, even just simple things like doing a McDonald's restaurant in the future. David, these guys are
they had been on your list of things to trim, sell.
Well,
is that no longer
over
the
and
case?
Over again, if we did not get granularity from Ruth Porat about where the money's being spent and what's happening, particularly on YouTube, then you have to sell the stock. So what did she do? She gave us more granularity than I've ever seen. And I will tell you, she's fabulous.
You said that from before.
When she was at Morgan Stanley.
You've been saying it for a long, long time.
Because she's the best. I like Anthony, too.
Anthony, the new CFO.
Husband.
Oh, her husband.
Yeah, like him, too.
I don't know. I didn't know who that was. $100 billion business potentially between cloud and YouTube as well. So
right.
Google, Alphabet is trying to focus, say, hey, you know, we've got a lot more than just what is going on at Pure Search.
No, this is a company that, frankly, a very apt piece by Nathanson. At Moffitt Nathanson saying, listen, maybe it was there all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe it was there all the time. You know.
Doesn't mean that they aren't
now
going
have
to see
what
more competition as the world moves to more generative AI solutions for search.
Yeah, but it turns
and
out that
Gemini is not going to be the answer for everybody.
I think that a lot of people were concerned that you would cannibalize search because of AI, and it didn't happen.
No, but Bing numbers were better, right? I mean, Bing is a thing in a way it wasn't a year and a half ago.
Well, these guys can be frank.
And, yeah, but Bing is, of course, if you remember, is Microsoft's. So now it's powered by AI. And
right. No, everybody went, look, yesterday, Bill McDermott talked about ServiceNow. Talked about people going on AI. Dave, this was an AI explosion last night, but no one talked about the check that you have to write to NVIDIA because all these guys are like coming up with their own faux little chips. And, like, you heard Micron talking about the high bandwidth. It is just remarkable how much that NVIDIA is behind all of these. And people should remember that because I know a lot of people feel that NVIDIA's seen its day. It's come and gone. And I don't think so, that Blackwell, as he mentioned, which is the next generation, allows you to do this perfect video.
It was interesting to listen to Sanjay talk about how chip intensive the new PC cycle will be. By the way, Microsoft PCs up 17 was a beat. Yeah. They do guide cloud and Azure higher. Look for double digit revenue growth in fiscal 25. That's in line with the street, Jim. B of A said the only AI beneficiary at this point is Microsoft. In a sense.
Well,
although they didn't
that's
give a lot
fair.
Of detail around Copilot.
That's not fair.
Did they? I mean,
no, they didn't. Well, they didn't tend to emphasize it because they had so many other great, you know, they gave you LinkedIn, they gave you unbelievable stuff on gaming. I mean,
yeah.
Everything. Now, it is interesting. Can we point out, so we have Microsoft saying great things about the PC. We had Micron earlier on saying the PC's bottom. But now Intel, which is the primary PC chip company, their stock is down 12%. So the question is that why did they see weakness in PCs like everyone else, as they say, when no one saw it other than Intel? Now, there was a moment in the Intel conference call where he said, we're going back to Grovian ways. That's a reference to Andy Grove, who, may I just mention, missed no quarters.
No.
Grove was a titan. And to be actually, to invoke Grove in this conference call with these numbers?
Yeah.
Heresy. Heresy.
I'll go back to Microsoft. It's a better story. $50 billion in CapEx. I still, that number potentially is what
well,
they made.
Well, and where's that check? Who's CapEx?
A lot
here?
Of that's going to NVIDIA. But it's not just Microsoft at $50 billion or Alphabet at 40 plus or Meta. Or it's even Elon Musk's new XAI effort, which is raising... the information was reported on, I confirm as well, $6 billion in new funds for a valuation that's over $18 billion. He's going to be spending billions buying H100s,
no,
by the way, from NVIDIA.
He has to get the higher end. He's got to get the 200s.
Or Blackwell.
He can't get the 100s. It's too slow.
For the XAI effort, which is separate from Tesla's purchases of the H100s.
That's true.
For Tesla to fuel its own self-driving. So the demand, Jim, just keeps coming.
No, the demand is incredible. And I thought Meta should be up a little more because they need to be in the arms race. But, you know, we're going to switch to David's bailiwick. We're going to go to oil.
Okay.
And the oil's very exciting today because it's Exxon and then, of course, Chevron. Let's check back in on shares of Chevron after reporting first quarter results, which I thought were great. I think the stock doesn't know what it's doing. So joining us now in a CNBC exclusive is Chevron CEO Mike Wirth. Mike, always great to have you on the show.
Morning, Jim. Good to see you.
Mike, I see many good things here. Right? Permian, absolutely terrific. Global, great. Of course, we have to talk about the acquisition. But I think that I've got two other acquisitions that I like. You did a renewable energy acquisition, and you did PDC, which was Colorado. So I'm asking, rather than go to the big dog that we may have to talk to that isn't complete, how were those and how'd they help you?
Well, Jim, you're right. It was a really strong first quarter. And, of course, those acquisitions, along with our base business, contributed to strong operational performance, strong financial performance, and strong shareholder returns. Operationally, this was the highest first quarter production in the history of our company. And first quarter U.S. production was up 35% versus last year. On financial performance, it's the ninth straight quarter with adjusted earnings greater than $5 billion and an adjusted return on capital employed greater than 12%. And all that translates to really strong returns to shareholders. This is the eighth consecutive quarter where we've returned over $5 billion in cash to shareholders. So strong contributions from our core ongoing business and, of course, important contributions from the recent acquisitions.
Well, in the meantime, you also, I'm not saying that you sell yourself short, but the things you're doing environmentally, I want to mention, because you're part of what I regard as the pragmatic energy complex. And I just want to give you the floor for people to know that we're not going to roll back the things that are involving climate change, because you're at the forefront of being pragmatic and doing the right thing.
I think you're using an important word, pragmatic. I use the word balanced as well. We're investing in things that we think can bring benefits today, and things that fit with our core competencies. And so in the most recent quarter, we sanctioned a project to increase oilseed processing capability to help grow our biofuels business, where we're the second largest biofuels producer in the United States. We also sanctioned a project in California to take an oil field where we've got solar production today to support our operations, and we've got excess solar capacity, which we will now use to generate green hydrogen and supply that initially, at least, out to retail stations for vehicle transportation. So these are things that fit with our competency, fit with our asset base, our customers, and things we can do today that help contribute to addressing the desire for a lower carbon energy system.
Mike, it's David. A lot of focus as well on the pending transaction to acquire Hess, and I wanted to just ask a few questions around that. First of all, when do you think you're actually going to schedule a shareholder vote, or when are they going to schedule a shareholder vote, and when do you believe you'll be in substantial compliance with what the regulators have asked in terms of the antitrust review?
Yeah, David, first of all, I think, I'm glad you're talking about shareholders. This is a transaction that is good for shareholders. For shareholders of Hess, the shareholders of Chevron, it's good for the industry in creating a premier energy company that's well positioned for the energy transition, and it's good for the people of Guyana and the country of Guyana. We expect the mailing on the Hess proxy to go out before the end of April, and a shareholder vote to be held late in May. So that's upon us here. And we've been working constructively with the FTC. We respect the role that they play in the oversight process on transactions, and expect to certify compliance with their second request here by mid-year, and work our way through the process with them by mid-year. So both of those things on track here in the second quarter.
Right. The unexpected part of this, of course, has been what is a dispute now with Exxon over whether, in fact, as part of their joint operating agreement in Guyana, where they own 45%, they have a right of preemption. That's being arbitrated now. Mike, how long is that going to take? And are you getting the sense that Exxon would like to push this arbitration out as long as it can?
Well, the arbitration process is really set by the arbitration tribunal. And so we have to respect their procedures in this, so we don't control that. At an investor conference last month, Exxon suggested that 5 to 6 months should be sufficient. We certainly believe that's sufficient time to address what's a pretty straightforward interpretation of contractual language. And we've worked with Hess, who's really party to this joint operating agreement, and I think in their disclosures have and we've indicated in our disclosures that we've suggested a third quarter hearing and a fourth quarter resolution would be appropriate. So we're working with Hess to move this along expediently, and we think that's in everyone's interests.
Yeah, Darren Woods was a guest earlier on Squawk Box, and he said, listen, we're not interested in making a play. These are his words for Hess. We're not interested in a transaction on Hess. But he continues to say it's about protecting the value they created, and of course they believe that they have that right of first refusal. What do you say, and is there any chance that we can actually, those of us who are trying to figure it out, see the language that is at issue here, given it would help the market decide who's got the upper hand?
Yeah, I think, I'll let Exxon speak for what their intentions are. We're not a party to this agreement, and it's a confidential agreement, and so that anything that would relate to making terms of this agreement public is something that really is the province of those that are party to the agreement, and that would be, Exxon, Hess, and CNOOC. And so, I think those questions are probably best directed to them.
Right. Although, just to make it clear, if, in fact, you were to lose this arbitration, you're not going to buy Hess.
There's a condition precedent that needs to be satisfied, and if an arbitration judgment in the event it were to go against Hess's interpretation of the contract, and we feel very confident that their interpretation is the correct one, then that condition wouldn't be satisfied and the transaction would not close, correct?
All right, so Mike, let's talk about the price of oil. I understand, I think there's about a $5 war premium is the way I look at it. Where we have an inflation problem in the country, where would oil be trading if we didn't have problems in the Mideast? And do you think that the United States can be a swing producer that actually get the price down?
Yeah, certainly for the last decade or so, the U.S. has been the producer that's met most of the demand growth in the world at the margin. Production in the U.S. is still growing, although not at the same rate it was earlier this last decade. Demand is growing pretty strongly, up a couple million barrels a day last year, probably another 1.5 million barrels a day this year. And so while there may be a slight risk premium in the market, we also have a market that's pretty finely balanced. Inventories that are a little bit are on the lower end. And I think we'd see still pretty decent commodity prices in this environment. But as you know, Jim, it's a volatile world, and we have to be prepared for ups and downs. We're prepared for volatility. We've got a strong balance sheet with net debt in the single digits, and we're very confident in the future in any price environment, which is why we raised our dividend 8% earlier this year and continue to have now a track record, 37 consecutive years of increasing our dividend. Dividend payout is 4%, which is almost three times what the S&P 500 is, and over the last 5 years, we've grown it at a rate 30% higher than the growth rate of the S&P. So we're confident in the future, and we're prepared for volatility in commodity markets.
Okay, so let's talk about what could make things difficult. You have the Permian. It looks like you're finally getting enough pipe from the Permian to bring that to market. It wasn't the case. And then you have the president calling for a pause in LNG in 2028. Which would be devastating, I think you would admit, because these projects have to be decided now for 2028, so there's a lot of them that are being shelved. Do you have enough pipe, and do you have enough export?
We do have offtake capacity out of the Permian. We've got export capacity, and so our company is well-positioned for market vagaries in terms of transportation and exports. But I think the broader point you make is, it's a good thing for the world that the U.S. is an innovative energy powerhouse. It's a good thing for our allies. It's a good thing for our economy. And it's a good thing that we've got dynamic, strong companies in this industry that have invested in U.S. energy. As at the same time, we're reducing carbon to our earlier discussion. And we need to have a policy environment that encourages investment, because not only does our economy rely on it, but those of our allies do, and the world economy does. And so we need policies that are predictable, are consistent, that protect the environment, but that also encourage investment and development of the resources that this country has that are vital to our security.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you for coming on and answering a lot of questions, tough questions about the Hess deal, because the stock has gotten killed since you, your questioning, David. I think it's important for Mike to know. Hope to see you soon, and glad that you came on the show after Chevron's, I thought, excellent quarter and terrific dividend policy. Thank you, Mike.
David, Jim, great seeing you always. Take care.
As we go to break, let's check bonds as well, as we had yields lower across the curve this morning in the wake of that relatively as expected core PCE. Let's take a look at yields. As for equities, financials, utilities, and energy definitely lagging today with the S&P close to 5090. Don't go away. Despite the midweek scare regarding equities, bunch of double-digit gainers for the week on the NASDAQ 100. You'll see MongoDB. Jim, is that a HashiCorp halo?
Well, we just, enterprise software's on fire again. Yeah. Incredible.
Tesla's number two. Google's going to be in there. Further down the list, Texan, KLA, onsemi, Marvell, as the chips definitely made a stand. We'll take a break here. Almost back to 5,100. Stay with us. Jim, what's on Matt tonight?
Two of my favorite fintechs, S&P Global, Doug Peterson, not the Jacksonville guy, and FICO, which is incredible. FICO's not only still around, but doing fabulously. Can't wait.
So many names we didn't get to today.
No,
AbbVie, Capital One, Roku, Snap.
Man, Roku not so good. Look, I'm wanting to listen to Evan. Tell him congratulations. I've been hard on him because I've been saying that he's nice.
Nice pre-market gain, at least 20%+ on Snap. That's
very
coming
good,
up later this morning.
Very good reach of advertising. Got to hand it to me. Held in there.
Jim, good weekend.
Yeah, you too.
We'll see. Jim Cramer, Mad Money, 6 p.m. tonight with the Dow and the S&P well into the green. Don't go anywhere.
You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
All opinions expressed by the Squawk on the Street participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information Squawk on the Street participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Squawk on the Street disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Squawk on the Street disclaimer.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.